WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Ed James III with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, March 19th. Florida Attorney General James Uthmeyer held a press conference in Sarasota yesterday to announce a major civil investigation into the communication platform Discord. Uthmeyer was joined by Sarasota County Sheriff Kurt Hoffman, who stated that local investigators are increasingly seeing online predators use platforms like Roblox and Snapchat as entry points before moving minors to Discord to avoid detection. The state has issued subpoenas to the San Francisco-based company demanding documents related to its marketing to children and its age verification practices. Uthmeyer alleged that the platform may have violated the Florida Deceptive and Unfair Trade Practices Act by promoting itself as safe while failing to police illegal activity involving minors. More than 100 No King protests are being planned across the state of Florida for next Saturday, March 28th. The mass mobilization is part of a nationwide movement protesting recent federal immigration operations and executive actions by the Trump administration. In Sarasota and Bradenton, local organizers are coordinating peaceful demonstrations to coincide with larger rallies in Orlando and Tampa. The coalition states the goal is to defend constitutional rights against what they describe as escalating authoritarianism. The American Civil Liberties Union is offering virtual Know Your Rights training sessions this week for those planning to attend. A feminist publication is launching a series of LGBTQ-focused campus events in Florida, starting right here at New College. Lux Magazine announced it is reclaiming the concept of campus tours to support students affected by recent cuts to diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The events are intended to provide resources and community space for LGBTQIA+ students. The move comes as several Florida universities face ongoing scrutiny and funding shifts under state-mandated DEI bans. In arts and culture, BAMFest, the Bradenton Art and Music Festival, returns to the Riverwalk this weekend. The free 8-hour event features live music, visual art creation, and interactive activities spanning 1 mile of the waterfront between the Green and DeSoto bridges. This year's festival includes a BAM Slam performance series at the Mosaic Amphitheater and environmental exhibits at Eco Park. The festival runs Saturday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. This has been Ed James III with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, March 19th.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views and opinions expressed by host, guests, and callers on WSL programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. And programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2025-26 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. My guest today is David Rovine. David Rovine has served as the VP of Baltimore Orioles Sarasota, but before that had a very extensive career in entertainment, but specifically theater management. David Rovine served on the City of Sarasota's Purple Ribbon Committee, which was tasked with determining possibilities for the future of the Van Wezel Performing Arts Hall. And, you know, that was at a time when the city was under contract to create a new performing arts hall. That could still happen. But, David, I just wanted to invite you so you could share your extensive background in theater management, but also, you know, what your vision might be for the future of the Van Wezels. So thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I think the Van Wezels is a great theater. I've been there many times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of live theater, so want to always make sure that live theater exists in Sarasota.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great community. It's very rare to be so arts rich to have a successful ballet company, orchestra, a resident theater, a professional performing arts hall, and so many other arts entities here in this community. Really incredible.
Yeah, I know. It certainly was one reason why I moved here. I was very impressed. Well, first of all, that I could get on a plane and get a direct flight. I'm from New York, so a direct flight to New York was just a big plus for me.
Critical.
Yeah. See family and just go back. But that rich tapestry of art organizations, and it is really rare, as you describe, opera, ballet, multiple theater venues. And this is part of just our cultural heritage here in Sarasota. It's what makes Sarasota unique, special. Not the only thing, obviously, but it really does contribute to our community heritage. So, David, tell me about, because you majored in theater. And I had shared, you know, I had an experience as young student in a play, which was just so amazing, so much fun. I totally share your feeling that there's nothing like live theater. But you took that and you became involved in the business aspect of theater. So share with us that transition. How did you come to be so immersed in theater management?
Well, as you said, I had a theater degree, and my goal was to be a starving, struggling actor in New York, which I was successful at. I did work in New York. I was both an actor and director.
Oh, great.
And I directed an off-Broadway show when I moved to New York, and I also worked for a company that put together shows that toured a series of five theaters throughout the country. There were dinner theaters. It was an era when dinner theater was very, very popular.
Yeah.
People were moving out of the downtown areas and still wanted to go to theater, didn't want to drive back downtown. And so these suburban venues opened up where you could have a dinner and show in the same place. And it was very popular for a period of time, probably about 20 years. And ultimately, I thought it was a great business. My family ended up buying a dinner theater in Orlando, Florida.
Really?
Which I ran for 13 years, directed all the shows, and but struggled early on because, believe it or not, when we got to Orlando, Disney had just opened several years prior.
Wow.
It was in 1973.
Okay.
Orlando had a tin roof airport, very much like Sarasota had at one time. And it was a very small community. And so we struggled to build the theater. And that really gave me a clear idea of the need to reach the bottom line.
Yes.
It was family money and it was going out the door quickly. And the goal was to try to turn the theater around and make it successful.
Yeah.
And ironically, typically theaters would succeed on groups of Kiwanis clubs, Lions clubs, but Orlando was so small at the time that the groups were very small, and we needed to find something else. And I noticed all these tour buses passing downtown Sarasota, which is really where the theater was. And I went out to Disney's parking lot and I wrote down the names and phone numbers of the buses, called the bus companies and said, hey, you're coming to Orlando. You're walking around during the day. Why don't you spend an evening enjoying a show and dinner? And they said, what a great idea. But you have to join the American Bus Association and the National Tour Brokers Association, which I did and went to their conventions. And they said, oh, that's great, but we're all set for this year. It will be next year. And eventually we had 15 buses parked out in front of the theater, sold out every night, and it turned it around.
You know, it's funny because as you say that, I remember my we had an eighth grade trip to Washington, D.C., and that was my first taste of dinner theater. It was all of us, you know, it was a great evening activity where our teachers took us to see a play, and we got all dressed up and had dinner. So, yeah, tying it in with people who are already on some kind of a tour schedule makes a lot of sense. So that really turned the ship around?
Completely.
Okay.
Completely.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only did we have an audience by that time in Orlando, but this sold out. We were doing eight performances a week with a matinee on Saturday, and you needed to fill that theater, and it turned it around completely.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you started out in theater management as a family business.
Correct.
Okay. But then you became affiliated with a national firm later.
That's a long story. I've had a really unique and convoluted career.
Well, I think it's relevant just because so people understand your national experience, because that's what made you such a great fit to serve on this city advisory board. So, you know, you don't have to take a long time, but just what was it like working in the national?
I was hired by a company called SMG, which is a worldwide national venue management company. And they manage arenas, stadiums, convention centers, and theaters.
Okay.
And a gentleman that I knew said that they were negotiating a contract for a new theater between two major cities, and would I be interested in going and opening up? I said, well, where is it? He said, well, we can't tell you. We don't have the contract, but it's between two major cities.
So Dallas-Fort Worth?
No, not quite.
Minneapolis, St. Paul?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think.
That's how I was, too, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Baltimore, Washington?
No.
Okay, I'm going to stop. I got three tries, I'm out.
There you go. That's right. It turned out between Chicago and Milwaukee.
Oh,
yes. Waukegan, Illinois. Never heard of it, but ended up spending 3 years. They're about, I would say, 90 miles apart.
Okay.
And it was tricky because, of course, major acts and Broadway touring shows played Chicago and they played Milwaukee. And that was a routing, and acts and shows do a routing. They plan it in the beginning of the year and they run through an entire year, and they would like to have them relatively close together because they have to pack up, and move to the next venue for the next night. And I was able to make that theater successful by demonstrating to agents and promoters that you could play Waukegan, not harm your ticket sales in Milwaukee or Chicago, because the populations were large enough, and give the act, the show, an extra play. And ticket sales are what theaters and venues and baseball stadiums and arenas are all about.
Right. Okay. So,
I have to add, it was the coldest 3 years of my life.
That's hard time.
Truly.
You know, my husband did his training in Boston, his medical training, and he's from Brazil, and it was really tough. You know, he's just like, Boston cold is his definition of cold.
And I think it snowed from October to May. It was great.
I think he couldn't get used to how dark it was. He set up, it was dark when I went to work and it was dark when I left in the wintertime. Okay, so you have had a decades-long career in theater management. You came to Sarasota to manage the Baltimore Orioles business.
Well, from Waukegan, actually, SMG moved me to another theater in St. Pete, right around the corner, the Mahaffey Theater.
Oh, okay.
And I managed that theater for four
Great
years,
place.
And
yeah.
a beautiful, beautiful theater.
Yeah.
But it really gave me a very clear understanding of this community, the
mm-hmm.
four theaters. In fact,
which are the four theaters?
Well, you have the Tampa Theater, of course. You have mm-hmm. the Clearwater Theater. You have the Mahaffey Theater. Mm-hmm. And you have the Van Wezel.
Okay.
Now, the thing that separates the Van Wezel is the bridge. But nevertheless, the people that book shows, the people that represent shows,
knows those
mm-hmm. four theaters.
Okay.
And so they tend to look at the region as one.
Cluster.
And that's why the Tampa Theater has kind of focused on Broadway and Clearwater mm-hmm. focused on rock and roll. And it made it a little difficult for the Mahaffey Theater because those two were well-established theaters.
Mm. I saw Seinfeld at the Mahaffey Theater.
Did you really? Yes,
yeah,
so I booked Jerry Seinfeld twice yeah. in Waukegan. We sold off four shows mm-hmm. of Jerry Seinfeld. So
that's another genre of performance that, yeah.
It's part of the mix of performing arts halls. Mm-hmm. You know, people tend to think that performing arts halls are just Broadway or the fine arts, the ballet, et cetera, orchestra. I dealt with the Sarasota Orchestra. I've dealt with the Florida Orchestra in St. Pete that plays all three of the theaters up there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the key. You still have comedians. You have different performances that go on.
Mm-hmm.
You have to determine what your regional audience wants to see.
Okay.
And so each performing arts hall throughout the country may have a very different slate of shows that they're mm-hmm. presenting based on their community. That's the whole key, going back to mm-hmm. ticket sales,
sure.
is who lives here, what do they want to see?
Yeah.
It's not about what I want to produce, mm-hmm. it's what the audience wants to see.
What they'll pay for.
Exactly.
Okay. So you were at the Mahaffey Theater. You transitioned to Ed Smith Stadium and the Baltimore Orioles.
Well, that was unique also. I had met John Angelos, who was the son of Peter Angelos, the
yes.
owner of the Orioles.
Uh-huh.
Many years ago, I was director of marketing at Gulfstream Park, a world-class thoroughbred racetrack.
Okay.
And at that facility, I love horse racing, too. I love horses, as we had discussed earlier. And I knew that here I am in the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area, a very dynamic, heavily populated marketplace. This is a world-class racetrack. These are the horses that prep in the winter for the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown and everything else.
Mm.
And it was already very successful, but like any business, they wanted to grow into the next generation. Horse racing had an older demographic. They needed to replenish their demographic and build a new audience and didn't really know how to do it.
Mm.
I felt, because of my theater background and entertainment background, that horse racing is long on it's really a gaming entertainment product.
Yeah.
And it's long on gaming and short on entertainment. So I brought in national music acts, concerts, to be there every Saturday and Sunday to attract a new audience. Now,
yeah.
I wasn't in the concert business. I did it from a marketing point of view
mm-hmm.
because I wanted to see which genre of music would attract mm-hmm. the audience that might consume this product once they were introduced to it.
Okay.
And I didn't bring in 18-year-olds because horse racing is a product of time and money.
Yeah.
You have to have time and money
right,
to really enjoy it.
Yes.
And so I was targeting, which was odd, but it was necessary,
yeah.
30 to 50-year-old folks.
Okay.
And so I knew that music that people remembered was really from their high school and college
That's
days.
True. Yeah.
So I targeted at that time acts that were popular when people who were 30 and 50 years old and gave them away as part of $5 general admission to the racetrack. So they were, in essence, free with your $5 general admission. And that was very unusual.
So I'm going to, because I want to bring it to the Van Wazel.
Sure.
And I really appreciate hearing all this because you obviously have a track record, no pun intended, of success in creative approaches to making a venue thrive financially.
Correct.
And,
correct,
you know, serve the community, because if it's thriving financially,
yes,
it's people want to go.
Yes.
And that enough people can afford to go.
Yes.
Right? And we've got a city, it's unusual for a city to own a venue, I would think. I mean, so this is a city-owned venue, the Van Wazel.
The city of St. Pete owns the Mahaffey.
Okay.
And many. The theater in Waukegan was owned by the city.
Okay. So you often have then a public investment in making a venue work. And I think that probably changes a little bit the focus of theater management. So the Purple Ribbon Committee met for 2 years. Is that right?
It
seemed like
correct.
It was 2 years.
Correct.
And that was at a time when we had a contract with the Sarasota Performing Arts Center Foundation. SPAC is the acronym that people use. That, you know, quite frankly, people were very concerned about the details of that contract. That's not really what I want to focus on. But the purpose of that committee was to look at what are we going to do with the Van Wazel, because there was a non-compete with this proposed, planned new theater that was going to be in the same complex, the Bay, right? The waterfront park that's being developed to turn, you know, the Van Wazel parking lot into a park. So we have a plan now to tuck parking underground, which I think makes a lot of sense. It's expensive, but it gives you the surface parking lot as park space. And tell me about what the vision was, what you saw from your time on the Purple Ribbon Committee, and what you believe that the Van Wazel could be used for under those circumstances. If we have a new performing arts hall, what would you do with the Van Wazel?
Well, I have several ideas of what I would do with the Van Wazel.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, in the midst of that two-year process, we were hit by three hurricanes a couple of summers ago.
Yes.
And there was considerable damage to Sarasota. There was considerable damage to the Van Wazel.
Yeah.
And that changed or altered a little bit, really, the future philosophy of the long-term viability of that building so close to the water.
Well, and, you know, I think it, just to piggyback on what you're saying, there was an engineering report that was basically put in a drawer when the contract was being approved by the city commission, which was an egregious withholding of information. That Karen's engineering report, I don't know, it was about 4 years ago, said that for this amount of money, it was about $1 million to $2 million, you can harden the theater, you can make these changes. And the city commission didn't have that information. Also, before the 2024 storm season, the city commission chose to get rid of the insurance, the flood insurance on the building, which, you know, obviously hindsight's 2020. But if you've got a performing arts hall that you're going to be relying on, you know, if we broke ground tomorrow for a new performing arts hall, which obviously is not going to happen tomorrow, you'd still need the Van Wazel for a good 5 years, I would
no
think.
Question.
You know, so the failure of the city, I would say, manager to inform the commission of that engineering report, and there's also one since, that this building can very economically, relatively speaking, be outfitted for storms. And you need to insure it. So I just want to share that. Because that's just some logistical information that's really relevant. And I completely take your point that these storms are real and the Gulf isn't getting any cooler.
Correct.
So we have to expect that storm surge is a new normal and this is going to happen.
Well, I accept that. Yeah, yeah. As you know, in this country, not everybody accepts that. But I do accept that.
Yeah.
And if you're a business person, you have to think hard about pouring money into a 50-plus-year-old building.
Yes.
To maintain it against storms, let alone maintain it against the regular degradation that happens by being close and involved with salt air, I was told at Smith Stadium. We've had destruction of that stadium in minor areas because we're this close to the bay. We're not close to the bay.
Mm-hmm.
So that is part of it. And you have to weigh that. You really have to weigh, hey, we want to have a theater around for another 50 years. Sarasota is going to continue to exist. It's going to continue to grow. Should you build something new versus maintain an older theater?
And if you're going to build new, why would you put it on the water?
Yep.
You can see what the Sarasota Orchestra has decided to do. I think they're building too far out from their subscriber base, but they're building, their plan is Fruitville and Cattleman. And the word is that their major donor said, you know, I don't want my money going into a structure that's on the water. To your point about some people not accepting, you know, climate change, of course that's true. However, when you talk about the temperature of the Gulf, nobody disagrees. That's just a fact. It's hotter.
I agree.
And it's not going to cool off anytime soon, which leads to more fierce storms.
Well, it's interesting. Again, you look at anything as a business. Did the orchestra, and I think the orchestra is great, love them, brought them into Ed Smith Stadium to do performances. Because it was good for both businesses. Oriole fans got a taste of orchestra and loved it. And orchestra fans got a taste of a baseball stadium that was clean and well-kept and well-managed and great customer service and loved it. So both grew. And, in fact, that performance by the Sarasota Orchestra is one of the most financially successful performances of the year. They loved performing there and have continued since I've retired, and it's wonderful
that
they're there.
That's a great collaboration.
But, obviously, as we know, the eastern part of Sarasota is growing tremendously. Mm-hmm. Lakewood Ranch is a very popular community, and lots of folks are moving out there, lots of new people coming into town. So from a strictly business point of view, even getting away from the Van Wezel, is the orchestra right by saying, hey, I want to be between the two large audience spaces because I want to sell tickets, going back to our original conversation? I think there's a lot of common sense in that. We can also have a kind of a sidebar conversation as to why Saks is closing when they are the only Saks between Tampa and Fort Myers and can't do business.
So can I tell? Okay. So I think that's such an interesting conversation. So let's talk about that.
Right.
I think if Saks were still at Southgate Mall, it'd be thriving.
I've heard that from many people, actually.
And I will tell you, you know, when they built that mall, they gutted the Department of Community Affairs under Rick Scott. That government organization would have required a development and regional impact study, predictably, because there was no study. Basically, do you need a mall? And the answer was no, we really don't. But okay, that's a location where you're supposed to, it's in the middle, like you say, all these people, and you're going to pull from everywhere. Yeah, but they're not all Saks shoppers. And that's my point with the orchestra, so hear me out.
Sure.
The Saks shoppers are on the water, they're on Longboat, they, you know, they're where you're a preponderance of people who are going to spend money at a higher-end store near where they live. And that Saks store was smaller. So, you know, you had a smaller store right next to the population that's most likely to buy there. And this bigger isn't always better. You know, people aren't driving up from Port Charlotte or from Northport or from Bradenton necessarily to go to Saks. They want Cheesecake Factory. They want J. Crew. You know, so likewise. I don't know that the Lakewood Ranch folks, I mean, I think they're here for weather, for golf, for that outdoor lifestyle. Are they subscribers to the orchestra? And also, are the Longboat Key folks who, you know, and I'm using that because they're the furthest away, are they going to make that journey? Are they going to have the same tight relationship that they do now when it's just right over the bridge versus another 10 miles away? And I think that's it's just a fair question.
It is a fair question, but then it begs another question. The aquarium is wildly successful, is doing very, very well.
How long has it been in business?
Well, granted, it just opened, so yeah. We have all see the long-term viability of everything,
of course. I think after 5 years, you can really assess what's going on with something. And if the aquarium's thriving, that's great. But an aquarium is not...
Everything is a different audience.
It's not the same as the
right.
$2,000 handbag craft.
Sure.
Really?
Saks is unique. There's no question about it, right?
Yeah.
And a theater audience and an orchestra audience, they're all very unique. And you really need to do marketing studies. I'm a big fan of research and studies, certainly before you invest hundreds of millions of dollars.
David, you're singing my song. Yes. We need good information.
Good information.
Yeah.
Information is power. Sure.
Yeah. So getting back to the Van Wezel, in your creative, storied career of theater management, if you were in charge and given what's going on, you've got the question of a new performing arts hall, but for the foreseeable future, this is our place.
Well, it is. Like you say, even if the contract was signed today and they did the first shovel of dirt for a new performing arts hall, you're talking about 5 to 6 years before.
Right.
And the important thing is, as we talked about routing for shows, you can't be dark. You can't be a city or an area that all of a sudden shuts down your performing arts hall and you're out of the loop, because they sit down and they plan out that tour.
So
and if you're not there,
behind.
You're gone. And if you're gone for a couple of years, you're definitely out of the picture. So it's critical that the Van Wezel stay open, that it functions as a performing arts hall, and until and if a new performing arts hall is built. And that's going to happen. So for all the people that were deeply concerned about, you know, I met my wife there, I had my first theater experience, I get that and I understand that. The theater's not going away in the foreseeable future. And that's also going to give us, speaking of information, what is the weather going to do? You know, we had a weather specialist on the getting back to the Purple Ribbon Committee, and I have great respect for this gentleman, and I believe in what he's going to say. I don't know when that killer hurricane is going to happen. I don't know when those particular winds from a particular generation is going to happen and drive, you know, the surge of water onto the property. But it could happen in the next 5 years. I'm not going to predict it, but it could happen. And so...
Well, I mean, what we saw in 2024...
Devastating.
Well, 2024 for St. Armand's It was flooded four times.
Absolutely.
So you had a no-name storm, and they weren't all hurricanes.
Right.
So the no-name storm in June of 2024, which most people pass right over, and they called it this is a 100-year storm. We had four of them. So June of 2024, you had Debbie, which was a tropical storm, but just dumped copious amounts of rain on Sarasota and strengthened into a hurricane. And then, of course, Helene and Milton, which, to my having lived here for 26 years now, that was enough for me to see, like, wow, okay, we're really in a different reality. And living near on the water, I watched high tide change. You know, like the line on the dock is higher now, just is. So. Was there resistance on the Purple Ribbon Committee to that information? Were there people there who didn't accept it, or was everybody pretty much on board that the weather was an issue?
No, I think in that case, everybody was on board regardless. Mm-hmm. You know, we had people with historical venue experience and engineer experience and theater experience, but when those storms happen, it was crystal clear that we're in a new world.
Yeah, new reality.
New reality, right?
So if we're going to need, let's just say for argument's sake, and here's why I'm going to say this. You've got Sarasota County making it very clear that they are not willing to commit tax increment financing money.
I think that's so naive and so short-sighted.
Yeah, well,
it's a shame.
Well, just, you know, tax increment financing is the development around the bay, which is, you know, around Boulevard of the Arts or 6th Street, say from Gulfstream to 10th Street, that area west of the trail. They took a baseline year, and then all of the development after that year, the increase in property values, the taxes from that increase goes into this bucket. And that bucket of money, the county, for their portion of it, because remember, if you're in the city, you're dual taxation. So you're paying to the city and you're paying to the county. The county's portion, they have said, we're willing to put it into the park, but we are not willing to take the rest of it and put it into a new performing arts hall. In fairness to the county, I think that was when, you know, the plan for a new performing arts hall was that it was going to be on the water. I'm hoping they're going to rethink that. It was also when it was clear that important engineering information had been withheld from the city commission, which was an egregious dereliction of duty. So there were really clear reasons why the county should be saying, hold the phone. I think if there were a more proactive, if there were a site that wasn't on the water, if there were a more long-term plan, a more realistic plan, the county may rethink that. But for now, I get why they're saying, listen, we've had four 100-year storms here. They manage our stormwater for the city of Sarasota. And it's just like we've got other needs that we need to take care of. And if the city's going to insist on that TIF money going to a performing arts hall, what they may be looking at is what we may be looking at is the county saying, you want that money there? Here's your stormwater management back. And they're not wanting that. So it's a tough situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, where would you put a new theater if a new theater was to be built?
You know, I look at that corner at the fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the fairgrounds, of course, where that flea market is, you know, you would have to consider, North Trail. There's a pretty much dead shopping center where you've got AmSCOT. AmSCOT to me is always it's always an indication that something's wrong. Sorry, AmSCOT. That's my opinion. But when people are paying exorbitant interest rates to cash their checks early from work, there's something wrong with your economy. And when the only thing happening in a shopping center is that kind of service, or we buy gold, you know, your government should be looking at, wow, how can we repurpose this and, you know, bring in jobs? But that piece of property on the North Trail, which I believe is south of Myrtle and north of Martin Luther King, you're very close to universities, colleges, and a subscriber base of patrons that would, you know, I think be very interested in supporting a performance art hall. It's still close to the water, but it's not right there. You know, it's a very different situation. Yeah. What do you think of that?
That's interesting. North mm-hmm. Trail certainly needs redevelopment. There's no question. Mm-hmm. I drove through it for some reason the other day and thought, gee.
Well, next time look for that place. You'll see it's very large. It's
Is that where McCurdy's used to
yes,
be?
Yes. Exactly.
Sure.
There. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's pretty barren right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's either a philosophy that you believe that a performing arts hall will rejuvenate an area, or it will be stuck there as a one-off, and is that a negative? Is that a downside?
And it depends how you develop it, because if you look at the Disney Performing Arts Hall in L.A., the Frank Gehry, the Starkitect Frank Gehry, there's no street life. I think you can expect a performing arts hall to help bring life to an area if there's actually 24/7 offerings, you know, if you don't just make, if you provide some storefronts, if there's a coffee shop, if there's a little cafe, you know, there's more to it than simply a performing arts hall.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure. You know, I always thought also that the, off of Fruitville, the fairgrounds there mm-hmm. might be interesting, but I know that's tied up in a contract.
Yeah.
You know, there are a bunch of places. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're anticipating, I guess, moving farther east, so to speak, on that same property, getting farther away from that from the water. Is that far enough?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, and they can only be so high.
Right.
Because there's an agreement with the condo buildings across the street not to disrupt the view corridor. So it would have to be very, very elevated, number mm-hmm. one, and flat, like not too high. It just seems like a lot of trouble when there's got to be other viable options that don't present those challenges. So tell me about the concern that, and you touched on it briefly, about the marketplace, because, you know, I've had Ron Cashton on the show, and we've talked about cannibalizing business and a lot of high dollar acts. I mean, Taylor Swift, you know, that they agree to, we're going to perform in Tampa at a venue, and then for a particular radius, we are not going to book ourselves the 2 days later within 90 miles because we're going to cannibalize our ticket sales
Correct.
In Tampa. And because Tampa is the bigger market, Sarasota is going to be impacted by agreements that artists make with the Tampa venues. So that has been a reason why some of the projections for a new performing arts hall here have people like me saying, wait a minute, it sounds great, but is the market actually going to support this plan? I mean, we can all say whatever we want, but we need information to know whether or not it's a good spend. What are your thoughts about that?
You use an extreme example, Taylor Swift.
Well, yeah, of course, Tay-Tay.
Right, exactly. You know, she's playing arenas.
Yes,
so,
yeah. Well, didn't she play Raymond James? Is that where she was?
Did she? Early on, she might have played Raymond James. I think she did.
Oh,
but
she was there a few years ago with the Eras Tour.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, a few years ago.
Raymond.
At this point, she's probably looking to play less dates at even bigger arenas.
Yeah.
But, you know, she knows all artists want to spread themselves across a country, an area, because mm-hmm. people buy their records, their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
sure.
what it's all about. And you don't want to cannibalize a market. But you're talking about the Tampa Theater and the other theaters that we discussed. The other three are the only ones. Tampa Theater has invested in Broadway shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has been one of the main reasons that they will always get first-run shows.
Okay.
In addition to which, they were the largest theater with 2,500 seats, and they were in the largest population base. So they had all the aspects of getting the shows.
Yeah.
They had the relationship with Broadway League. They had the relationship with their community. And that was their focus, was Broadway shows. We still will not get first-run Broadway shows. But, mm-hmm. you know, Broadway shows have a succession. There's the first
right.
run that they like to fly into, build the sets, and be there for 4 weeks.
Wow.
Then they mm-hmm. decide on another run where they can do 2 weeks. Then they decide on a third run where they can do weeks and stay in one place and sell enough tickets. And then they do split weeks mm-hmm. where you're just doing a single night performance, and then a bus and truck takes the cast and the set down the road.
And that's where we are, right?
Right.
I mean, we've got like a weekend worth of Les Mis.
Well, we just had MJ, which is a terrific show, and I don't know what the box office results were. I'm imagining it was great. And it played a week, I'm pretty sure. And,
oh, wow.
and they're playing a week at
okay.
the Van Wezel. There is a strong Broadway audience here, mm-hmm. just like there is a strong orchestra audience here and ballet audience. So they go. The key is to move up
in
line.
The tier.
Yes, in
mm-hmm.
tier, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Because otherwise, if I love Broadway and MJ comes out first run, well, or whatever the show is, I'm going to go drive to Tampa because
yeah.
that's my passion. Driving yeah. the distance
is
not the effect.
Deal.
But if I know, okay, it's not going to come this year, but next year it'll be here or the year right after.
Then you won't.
You wait.
Okay. So given that, what's your take on investing in the Van Wezel? You know, given, let's say it's a 10-year timeline, which I think is realistic. You might disagree. I'm happy to have you disagree. But let's say for the next 10 years, we're going to be using the Van Wezel at least. What do you think makes sense? Should we be investing? Obviously, we need to make it weatherproof. But beyond that, what kind of investment makes sense?
I don't know. You know,
okay.
what are you putting? How much are you spending for 10 years knowing that that's the end? You know, we did a lot of things on the Purple Ribbon Committee. We listened to a lot of experts, and one of the first tours we did was the Van Wezel itself. And we mm-hmm. listened to the staff. We listened to the people that load in Broadway shows and big shows. And there are no elevators to bring up the new highly sophisticated technical lighting and sound equipment that shows use, and they have to drag it, all this equipment, up through stairwells.
Mm.
So there, you have to back up and say the people that are producing shows know this,
mm-hmm.
and they think about that.
Yeah.
And does that make them say, gee, I really want to go to Sarasota, Florida, where they don't have enough technical and modern support
mm-hmm.
to easily bring my show in?
So,
I mean, it's a totally unionized operation. We're causing extra hours of work that
mm-hmm.
don't have to be spent in other venues because this is a 50-some-year-old venue.
Well, okay, so I'm going to push out my timeline. I mean, well, you know, there, as I know you're aware, there are folks who really feel like listen, this is the next 20 years. This is the next
50 years, I hope.
This is the next 50. Yeah, so let's say we're in it for the long haul. If we're in it for another 50 years, as very famous theaters like the Sydney Opera House, you know, there's waterfront theaters, there's New York theaters that have been around forever. What then? How would you invest in it then?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a really tricky situation. It's a tricky situation. And I think Karen's Engineering, who I know and who I listened to, and they were presented several times, and I know them through another reason, maybe thinking twice on what it takes to protect a building. And I understand they're in the business of fixing things that break.
Right.
That's their business. So,
Or maintaining
buildings that have water issues. Are vulnerable. So I don't know. It's very tricky. I do think that if you're planning the future, that you build a new performing arts hall.
Okay. You're open to location.
Yes.
Being maybe not on the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
And let's say, for the sake of our dreaming, planning here, let's say my location works. Why not? Right? So this is where the old McCurdy's was, and it's where that big shopping center on North Trail, south of Myrtle, north of Martin Luther King, is empty, pretty much. Let's say that's where it is. How many seats? What kind of shows? Given the market as you know it, you know, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what should Sarasota be doing and investing in if it's new to attract shows that this community would enjoy? Do we need to have that Broadway-type logistical infrastructure you're describing?
Yes.
Okay.
A performing arts hall should be prepared for Broadway-type shows.
Okay.
We get them. There's an audience for them. They're selling here. You know, if you look at the bottom line results and ticket sales, Broadway shows do sell. There is clearly a Broadway audience here. So, and if, as you said, you really liked the fabric of the arts, and it was part of a draw.
Yes.
Well, the same people who feel the way you, or the people that feel the way you do, feel the same way percentage-wise about Broadway shows. They want to see Broadway. Broadway certainly adds a certain panache to a community.
Yeah.
You know, you can be all rock and roll, like the Clearwater Theater, and just do one-offs and say, hey, we're making a ton of money. That's where people want to come. They'll drive from Sarasota. They'll drive from anywhere because we've got the top rock and roll theater style acts. So they're going to come here.
Yeah.
So you have to look at this community also. Do you think this community will always be the demographic that it is now? You know, you talked about the folks on the water that shop at Saks, and I am aware of that audience, and I get it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like horse racing. It's an older audience, and time and money.
Time and money.
Are they constantly being replenished by the same exact type of person? I am stunned. I live downtown Sarasota, so we walk the streets at night, and, you know, just to stroll, and we stroll the streets.
Sure.
I don't want to say we walk the streets. We stroll the streets.
You know what you mean.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good. There's a very young audience on a weekend in downtown Sarasota. I'm stunned by that because 5-7 years ago when I strolled the streets of Sarasota, it was not that. Now, who are these young people? Where are they coming from? And why did they come to downtown Sarasota?
Well, I'd have to say We've got a lot more bars. There's mm-hmm. more of a bar scene, mm-hmm. which does attract a younger crowd. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, half of the kids in Sarasota County in our schools are eligible for free or reduced lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So what that says to me is you've got half of the families in our county struggling to afford the basics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to have public investment in a performing arts hall, you need to keep your eye on, you know, how can we be inclusive so that there's offerings at every price point. It's, you know, it's just something to be aware of. But we only have a few minutes left, David, and I want to ask you, what kind of a planning process do you want to see the city embrace that perhaps they didn't before? Because the plan for, and talk about a new performing arts hall, has been underway since 2014. And, you know, in my work, I've just seen really big gaps. I mean, it's not enough to draw a picture and say you're planning something, which is essentially what happened for a very long time. Oh, we've been doing that. Yeah, well, your picture has no parking, and there's actually no plan on it about it. There's a phrase, you know, faire des châteaux en Espagne. In French, it means making castles in Spain. We can all daydream, but you have to put a foundation under it. So what kind of a foundation should the city commission be creating? A literal, physical, you know, plan.
Market research. I think you have to do plenty of market research. It will not only tell you what the current audience thinks and wants, but it'll also help the performing arts hall deliver more people and broaden the range of what they're producing. But market research.
Yeah.
And going back to parking, I mean, I was probably a nuisance on the Purple Ribbon Committee because parking is critical.
No, thank you for
critical.
That.
Critical. And they will make the greatest mistake of a lifetime
mm-hmm.
if you do not have sufficient on-site parking.
Yeah.
You know, every place I've been, and I've been in multiple places, you must have people parking.
Yeah.
You cannot have them park all over the city and walk or bus them. That's insane.
You mean the shuttles and the whole Uber lifestyle?
It's a ridiculous concept.
Okay.
A ridiculous concept.
Okay. Well, David, thank you so much for sharing your expertise. I'd love to have you back as this plan unfolds, because I think that whole market research piece is so key. And whatever we do, we want it to be successful.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for your service to this city. And it's been a pleasure learning from you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and everybody, thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.
Never heard before. Once another man took her on a younger day. All a younger can do is pray. Then she found him, maybe he found her. His were gentle words she had never heard before. Ooh, well, she had never heard before. He said,